This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 41. His first attempt was a mess. Forced to use his right hand, and too timid to grip the makeshift instrument tightly, the plastic sawed his palm as it slid its ragged edges over his skin. Dropping the stinging sliver, Tom calmed himself and tried again. He placed two quivering fingers under his armpit and located the device. Concealed as it was under such a thin layer, it felt like a loose piece of bone, lightly tethered to its surroundings, floating under his touch in a small circle of freedom. Recovering the cutter, Tom repositioned it in his hand and tightened his grip until his knuckles stood proud and white and a small trickle of blood dripped from its protruding tip and onto his stomach. He brought it to his side and pushed the congealing fluid and then the sharp underlying point of plastic against his flesh. Hands shaking, he felt the skin puncture. It was one thing to pierce himself in anger with a fine needle, quite another to butcher himself in warm blood with a scraggy dagger. The sensation of the sudden puncture caused him to jump, and just as suddenly the plastic blade slipped sideways and snapped in two. Tom almost screamed in fright. To him, the noise was that of a rifle shot. He hit a bone, or perhaps the device itself. And now, as well as a ripped and weeping wound, he was cursed with a shard of shampoo shrapnel jutting from his body underneath his arm. Thankfully, on steeling himself to look carefully at the damage, he was able to tease the debris free with ease. Taking no time to reflect, terrified more by the thought of failure than what he was doing, Tom grabbed another piece of the bottle and tried again. The scalpel of choice this time was a side length running from the top edge of the container to the bottom corner to form a thin pointed scoop that could have been designed to cut tiny samples from Arctic ice. Ignoring the blood, the pulsating pain and the slippery shard digging into his fumbling right hand, he studied his work as he dug the scoop inwards at a shallow angle. He tried to gouge the device from his flesh as though it was a winkle, but it was no use. There was no way this would work. All he succeeded in doing was to push the thing deeper into his body and rip his skin to slimy shreds. Finally, shaking the fog of fading consciousness from his mind and tears obscuring his vision, he found another sharp-edged shard, eased it under his skin, and pulled it up and outwards with a powerful and careless stroke as though he was cutting open a football with the wrong side of a blunt knife. His skin ripped, blood flooding his side and dripping to the floor. Tom needed to rest, to lie back and recover from the brutality of his actions, but he could not afford the time. Trembling, he pulled the skin apart with his fingers, rolling a flap of white gristle out of the way as he searched for the pain maker. And then he had it. Slicked in sticky fluid and attached to his body with green fleshy blobs, he maneuvered a piece of plastic between it and one of his ribs and yanked hard and fast. One end detached immediately, and two attempts later, he rolled the thing in his fingers and smiled a smile of triumph and satisfaction. This was the route to his salvation. He was going to enjoy watching Silas's face when he realized that the boy, as he liked to call him, was no longer in his control. With his moment of congratulations over, Tom lay full length on the floor, damaged side up. He dabbed a tiny drop of serum onto the wound. Somehow, he couldn't think how it was possible through the discomfort and stress. He closed his eyes and slept. Something beyond the cell awoke him. It took Tom a number of seconds to remember where he was. He looked under his arm, only slightly amazed but enormously gratified to see no sign of a wound. Scattered around him, scabby pieces of broken plastic matched the black mess covering his skin and floor. He jumped up, frightened that Silas would discover what he'd done. Splashing himself quickly at the sink, he cleaned the dried blood and tidied the bathroom. Finished, he dressed and returned to his bed and lay looking at the ceiling, thinking ahead to his next move, dreaming of the shock he'd give the decrepit bully masquerading as a father. He wondered when he should do it. The man was getting stronger. He saw that, even through the sickness and cramp raging his body. He remembered how weak he'd felt when his own defences had been marshalled to fix his arm. How awful he felt now. What must he be like? His whole body assailed by a call to arms, his antibodies ordered into action, not on one spot or another, but on his varicose veins, his decaying brain, his jaundiced skin, wormholed bones, rotten teeth, diseased eyes, his shriveled frame and poisoned plasma, an ancient catalogue of damage accrued over 2 centuries. But Tom had little doubt that the weakness would be temporary. He had to make his move before the man recovered. And then there was the iconic chair, the symbol of his family's suffering. He could not bear the thought of 1 second sitting in that chair. He would act before then. He had to. This thought was brewing when the lock turned again and the door crashed open, slamming hard against the inside wall of his cell. Tom jumped to his feet in fright, suddenly wondering if his guilt was written in his eyes. He focused on his anger and set to tame it. Better repressed aggression than betraying himself by shying away from what he was about to face. He saw a foot first. There was nothing special about the foot. It belonged to George Silas. The same sober brown shoe covered the same foot, but even before the rest of them followed that step into the room, Tom knew that the man was very different to the creature he'd left curled on the floor. The movement was crisp, sure and swift. George Silas strode forward and turned to look at Tom. He smiled and spread his arms as though he wanted to embrace the boy, but the two stood still, Tom in shock at the recovery he'd hoped would take an age. A middle-aged man, not an old one, lithe and wiry, a curiously bald head, white scalp atop baby-white face, a pale moon shining happily over expensive old man clothes. Despite his resolve, despite his simmering rage, Tom shrunk inwardly as the man spoke.
"I owe you, Tom. See what great things we can do. You and me. Together."
Chapter 42. To Tom, it seemed as though he had been in Silas's grip for months and was amazed to realize it was no more than 6 hours. He stood transfixed as a man, his arms still outstretched, spun on the spot and whooped joyously. Drunk with youthful vigor, he seemed to promote Tom from prisoner to best buddy. He suddenly announced that he would show Tom round his new home.
"You mean I've never been here before?"
Silas moved like a hyperactive hummingbird, his actions lending a skittish air to the formerly dour character underneath the still dour clothes. He ignored Tom's question and began the tour. The lab, Tom discovered, was constructed underneath the house in what had been a complex of cellars.
"You were always my favourite,"
he told Tom as he showed him round his new home. At one point, as they cruised through the deserted kitchens and exited the house into a large patio, Silas wrapped his arm around Tom's shoulders and drew him close. Tom suppressed a shudder.
"You don't yet know how special you are, boy. How dear you are to me."
"What about Tess?" A single, circular, wrought iron table waited in the centre of a concrete space that looked as if it had been built for 20. A lonely chair sat under its top, facing an expanse that looked much like the front lawn but without the steep embankment, the curving steps of the driveway bordering its perimeter.
"Sit,"
the man ordered. Tom did as he was told, pleased to duck away from that arm.
"Wait."
Silas disappeared into the house and emerged seconds later with a kitchen chair swinging in the grip of one hand. Practicing his newfound strength and agility, he twirled the thing carelessly and fumbled it at the last moment, the clatter of wood on flagstone rattling the tranquil setting. Tom thought he saw the man blush. He wanted him to relax. He wanted him to talk. And so he covered the awkward silence as Silas righted the chair and sat. "The policeman," he said. "Chief Inspector Howard. He told me I have a sister." Tom tried to remember what he'd said to Silas already. If he could, he wanted to convince him that he knew almost nothing apart from a few vague memories gleaned from his time at Cregan. Silas eyed him carefully. If he suspected otherwise, he did not show it.
"We were happy. It was a happy time. Kathleen wasn't your mother, but she wished she was."
The man stood up, circled his seat and sat down again. He then went still and looked across the lawn, his sharp focus fading to a distant stare. The young, old man conjured fond memories that Tom suspected clashed with reality. It was strange, given Tom's fractured recollection of the hate in the man's heart and the pitiless torture he'd put them all through. The distraction gave Tom a chance to glimpse his surroundings, scan the area for that single opportunity for escape that had to be near. He was struck by how empty yet tidy the place was. It was too big for 10 people to live in, never mind one, and there had to be a sizable staff to keep it that way. The lawn was immaculate, the gaps between the flagstones free of weeds, the windows clean, the kitchen spotless and tidied bare. He'd only met the butler and even he was gone. Tom assumed they had all been dismissed in his honour. "I sort of remember." He forced a smile. "They were happy times," he lied. Impossibly, Tom forced the horrors of the cavern, the electric prod, the manacle, the chairs, the instruments of a stolen childhood, from his mind, and concentrated instead on the feelings he had for the family of three that had given him so much joy. Silas came back and focused on the boy. He was still smiling but fingered his ring absently. Tom looked at it and stopped the warm thoughts turning to laughter. He had no idea. For some reason, Silas was willing to let Tom think that they were all close, but even in this lie, Tom learned an important fact. His memories of Cregan were real. He may have concluded this on his own, but now it was confirmed by Silas. He had been there. His body was 15 years old, but he'd lived in the middle of the 19th century. He would make sense of it later if he could, but right now he needed to build on the shaky lie that Silas and Tom were father and son, picking through the memories of a happy childhood. He tried his earlier question again. "I can't remember, Tess. Are they still searching for her?"
"She's important to us. We'll find her."
Tom noticed that every now and then Silas winced lightly as though some part of his body had just twisted inside him. For a second or two, around that time, the man was incapacitated. Tom knew that he felt safe at those times because he thought he could bring Tom down with ease. As they chatted in superficial calm, Tom tried to time those twinges to see if he could predict their onset. At times he felt he could just get up and run. If he entered the woods, he might escape. But what then? Could he get out of there again? Would he find someone to help him? Could he go to the police? He also needed to know more. He was torn, but for now he would watch and learn and wait. He'd hoped to move before Silas recovered, but that option had all but disappeared before he'd thought of it.
"I want to run some tests,"
Silas said, taking control of the conversation.
"On me?"
"We need to recover your memory."
"In the chair?"
Tom said this too quickly and he tried to calm the alarm that must have sounded in his eyes.
Remember the chair.
This was a quiet statement, and Tom knew it was pointless denying it now.
I don't know why, but it frightens me.
This seemed to anger Silas, and the mask of concern dropped for a brief moment.
Not again!
But as soon as he exploded, he calmed and smiled.
The girl was here, she would tell you the same. Stay calm. Do as you're told, and we'll all get along fine.
Tom wanted to smash the man in the face and run, but he cooled his temper and agreed.
I think I remember that, he said.
What's it for? He asked with all the innocence he could muster. Silas suddenly jumped to his feet and said with the excitement of a child,
Better I show you. Don't you agree?
DreamWorks.com.